The signatories to the 2015 agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have resumed negotiations in an effort to revive it. The number of daily COVID-19 cases and deaths is declining in Iran, with the country reporting its lowest fatalities in over 19 months. And Somalia's prime minister orders the country's security forces to take orders directly from him after he was suspended by President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The signatories to the 2015 agreement, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, have resumed negotiations in an effort to revive it. This is the eighth round of talks in Vienna between Iran and the P4+1 group of countries, namely Britain, France, Russia, and China, plus Germany, since April. The U.S., an initial party to the JCPOA, is not directly involved in the talks. Washington says that it wants to rejoin the agreement after unilaterally abandoning it in 2018. Iran, however, says that this is only possible if the U.S. verifiably removes all JCPOA-related sanctions imposed against it after the withdrawal. Tehran also wants assurances that the other side will not leave the agreement again. The Iranian foreign minister says the issues of guarantees and verification are the main points of the new discussions.
The most important issue for us is that through such terms and issues, we would reach a point where, first of all, Iran's oil is easily sold without any restrictions, and its revenue is credited to Iran's banking accounts in foreign currency, and we would enjoy all of the economic benefits foreseen in the JCPOA.
Amir Abdullahian noted that the talks will be based on a new joint and acceptable document that was agreed earlier this month. During the previous round, the new Iranian administration presented two separate proposals on the removal of U.S. sanctions and Iran's return to its nuclear commitments under the JCPOA. Iran says the Europeans agreed to incorporate the proposals in a draft text that will form the basis of the upcoming negotiations. Okay, so the breaking news is coming from Syria regarding the occupied Golan Heights. Syria is condemning Israel's decision to double the number of settlers in the Golan Heights. State media making that statement, Syria condemning Israel's decision to double the number of settlers in the Golan Heights. So that is what Syria has said, condemnation coming from Syria. And, of course, additional pieces of this news as it trickles in, we will make sure to give to you. Earlier, we were joined by Homolesky, a correspondent at the venue of the talks in Vienna. Now, she says China and other participants in the talks believe that the seventh round of negotiations was fruitful since both sides agreed on a comprehensive agenda for the continuation of the talks.
The Joint Commission sessions officially opened this eighth round, and both at the expert level and the level of political directors, these negotiations are going to continue. We're just ahead of this live, speaking with the Chinese ambassador to these negotiations. He was giving a little briefing about what's been going on today. Just ahead of the Joint Commission session, he said that he believes, and all of the other sides believe, that the previous round was a fruitful round, was a productive round, because they came up with that joint document that we just talked about. He said that we came up with a common text on nuclear activities. There was also news from sources close to the Iranian team saying that progress has been made on the issue of nuclear activities or Iran's return to its nuclear commitments. And it has shown that Iran is serious in these talks and is willing to show flexibility. On the other hand, he said that the Chinese ambassador said we have come up with a new understanding on how to deal with sanctions lifting as well, which in my view, again, refers to the joint text that the sides have agreed to base their discussions on. When we're speaking about this joint document, this in no way means, Khabar, that there's an agreement on the issues that are included in that document. Indeed, in this round or the other round, if there will be any, all of the delegations may come up with new proposals, new ideas that they would want to incorporate into this. It's the way that these negotiations work. So the important achievement for the previous round was that they have agreed to work on this common text, and now it's time for them to go into the contents. So before this, it was all about agreeing on the agenda, and now it's about going into the content and discussing those tough differences those tough decisions that need to be made and the differences that are still there.
Iran continues to witness a declining trend in fatalities from the coronavirus. The country reports 34 new deaths from the pandemic. It's the lowest daily tally in over 19 months. The health ministry says 20 out of 31 provinces have reported no fatalities in the past day. Iran's daily infections were also below 2,000 in the past 24 hours. That's also among the country's lowest daily caseloads reported in the past couple of weeks. The downward trend in Iran's COVID cases and deaths is largely attributed to the mass vaccination campaign. More than 117 million jabs have been administered nationwide so far. Nearly 51.5 million Iranians have received two doses of a COVID vaccine. That is almost 61% of the country's population. The Gaza Strip is bracing for the worst to come following the discovery of the first case of the Omicron coronavirus variant in the impoverished coastal sliver. The healthcare system in Gaza has been facing the COVID-19 pandemic with limited capabilities, with their health facilities suffering from shortages of medical supplies. Ashraf Shannon brings us more details in this report.
As the world marks International Day of Epidemic Preparedness, Gaza's health sector continues to suffer due to the hermetic Israeli blockade in place since 2007. On Sunday, the Ministry of Health in Gaza announced the discovery of the first case of Omicron COVID variant in the blockaded enclave. Around 1,700 Gazans have already died because of the coronavirus since last year. The Gaza Strip, which is one of the world's most densely populated areas, has recorded nearly 190,000 COVID-19 infections since May 2020.
We have discovered the first case of the Omicron variant in the Gaza Strip, and this indicates that this variant was now spreading among the population. The discovery poses a new challenge to the enclave's weak health system. Omicron is a fast-spreading variant and highly infectious, and will be dominant among the coronavirus infections in the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli blockade and multiple wars have had a devastating impact on the well-being of people in the tiny coastal sliver. The Israeli regime also maintains tight restrictions on the entry of humanitarian supplies, including medicines and hospital equipment, to combat COVID-19 and its variants. People in Gaza are bracing themselves for the worst following the local discovery of the Omicron variant.
The Gaza Strip's health system is fragile because of the Israeli blockade. We are afraid of Omicron because we know that it is extremely lethal. Gaza is not prepared for Omicron, and we are praying for a miracle.
The Ministry of Health in Gaza needs all the support it can get in order to combat this deadly variant. We don't have enough hospital beds or medicines because of the Israeli blockade. We call on all international organizations to help us combat the coronavirus, especially the Omicron variant.
The Israeli regime has compounded the risk of coronavirus infection for over 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza, making it extremely difficult to combat the deadly pandemic.
Israeli inhumane practices have battered Gaza's health system. Experts say that the Omicron variant will only worsen the health situation in the blockaded enclave. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Christmas travel chaos continues as airlines around the world are canceling more flights amid concerns over the rise in the Omicron variant of COVID-19. U.S. airlines have canceled more than 2,000 flights on Monday, with 800 of them being domestic ones, forcing travelers to seek other forms of conveyance. These were on top of over 3,000 cancellations during the Christmas holiday weekend. About 8,000 flights have been scrapped globally over the past 3 days. That has caused further uncertainty for New Year holidaymakers. German Airlines says it has decided to cancel 10% of its winter flights. In Asia, Chinese airlines have experienced the most disruption since Christmas Eve. Airlines say that they have been forced to take the decision as a significant number of their workers are in quarantine after being exposed to the Omicron variant of COVID-19. The political rift in the conflict-ridden Somalia intensifies. The prime minister has now ordered the country's security forces to take command directly from him after being suspended by President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed. Mohamed Hussein Roble has accused the president of trying to stage a coup against the government and the constitution. That after the presidential office announced the suspension of Roble's powers, citing corruption charges. The political feud between Mohamed and Roble has generated months of tensions in the African country. Both figures accuse each other of holding up parliamentary elections. The president, Mohamed, has also removed from office the commander of Marine Forces. In April, pro-government and opposition fighters opened fire on each other in Mogadishu after the president extended his term without holding fresh elections. On to Iraq, Iraq's Supreme Court ratifies the results of the October 10th parliamentary elections that were challenged by various political groups. In a statement, the court's media officer announces the approval of the vote outcome. That shortly after the apex court rejected an appeal filed by the popular mobilization units to annul the results. The ratification now clears the way for a new parliament to hold its inaugural session within 2 weeks under the law. The country has been locked into a political stalemate since the elections, in which a bloc led by Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr was declared as the biggest winner. The PMU and some other political groups, however, contested the outcome as fraudulent, citing irregularities. The Arab country witnessed widespread protests in the aftermath of the elections, with people demanding a fresh recount or fresh voting. December 27 marks the anniversary of a U.S.-led attack in Afghanistan's northeastern Kunar province that led to the deaths of 10 civilians. An Afghan investigation found that American troops who were part of a covert operation program, along with CIA paramilitary officers, carried out the assault. They gathered the victims in one room and opened fire. Most of the victims were students and children, aged between 12 and 18. Some of them were handcuffed before being shot. Witnesses said they saw the students' school books covered in blood. NATO officials initially claimed that they had targeted Taliban members, but a 2015 investigation carried out by then-Afghan government asserted that they were all civilians. The United Nations expresses deep concern over escalating violence in Myanmar, urging a ceasefire between the military and the opponents in the Southeast Asian nation. In a first statement as UN Special Envoy for Myanmar, Nolene Hazer also calls for humanitarian assistance to all in need, including those forced to flee. She also referred to the escalation in Kaya State, where 35 civilians, including women and children, were killed 2 days ago. On Sunday, a UN official said that he was horrified by the killings and demanded the government launch a probe. Local media blamed the tragedy on the military that took power in a coup against the civilian government in February. About 1,300 anti-coup protesters have been killed and thousands arrested since then. Hundreds of people have also fled to neighboring Thailand amid the crackdown. Tensions, sanctions, and threats to take more actions were the main features of U.S. foreign policy in 2021. The incumbent President Joe Biden was expected to take a less tense approach towards world affairs than his predecessor Donald Trump. Disputes persisted and even intensified on multiple fronts.
Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
President Joe Biden, a Democrat, took over the White House from his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, in January 2021. There were expectations that American foreign policy would see less tensions with allies and adversaries under Biden. But that didn't happen, and at times, tensions grew further, like those with China. In fact, the rivalry with China shaped a great portion of Biden's foreign policy as he sought to counter Beijing's growing influence in the world. As a result, disputes such as those on Taiwan, trade, and technology escalated. President Biden even angered his European allies when in September he announced an alliance with Britain and Australia meant to help Canberra build nuclear-powered submarines in the Pacific. The U.S. drew a Pacific ally closer to meet the China challenge, but at the cost of a 2016 deal being scrapped between France and Australia. Furious, France called the deal a betrayal that had been secretly negotiated for months. The U.S. move further increased the push within the EU that the bloc needs its own independent military force, with member states aiming to agree on that in March 2022. To counter Beijing, Washington also put more focus on Africa, pledging to boost development in the continent where China already made investment and concluded trade agreements. The U.S. remained at odds with another power in the East, Russia. In addition to several rounds of sanctions over the alleged poisoning of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny, Washington sparred with Moscow over Ukraine, too. It accused Moscow of preparing a war on its neighbor, ignoring repeated calls by Russia to stay away from near its borders. Cuba and Venezuela were targeted too. Sanctions against the two Latin American countries remained in place and even intensified over their internal policies. Iran was not an exception either. While it was trying to resolve issues surrounding the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 Iranian deal, But allies in West Asia had a different place in the U.S.'s foreign policy. Political and military support for Israel continued, despite the regime's atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. And American ties with Saudi Arabia were warm, despite Biden's election promise to punish the kingdom for the 2019 murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Biden had also pledged to help end the Saudi-led war on Yemen, but despite that, he continued to approve weapons sales to the Saudi government, making the conflict drag on and resulting in more atrocities and war crimes. On Syria, the U.S. pursued this policy, keeping forces there on what Washington called an advisory mission to support Kurdish fighters battling the Daesh terror group. However, the American forces and their military bases came under attack on various occasions. The attacks happened amid calls for the U.S. expulsion from Syria, mainly over civilian casualties caused by American operations. Similar calls also grew in neighboring Iraq, where the U.S. finally ended its combat mission and delimited it to an advisory one. And in Afghanistan, the U.S. implemented President Biden's so-called policy of ending forever wars. America fully withdrew from Afghanistan in August, following a sweeping takeover by the Taliban, the same group Washington toppled when it invaded the country 20 years ago. Biden defended his decision to end the Afghan war as he faced widespread criticism at home and abroad over the pullout marked with chaos and deadly violence. He also remained adamant to unblock frozen assets for Afghanistan under its new rulers, leaving that country alone to deal with all the ruins left behind from the longest overseas war in U.S. history.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu those who think that Imam Khomeini had proposed republicanism and democracy as a strategy in order to make silent the enemies, and that the system of the Imam's viewpoint is the system of guardianship and nominated rule of guardianship of religious jurisprudence, such allegation is not compatible with intellectual system of the Imam and practice of religious jurisprudence is in relation to designation. Can one speak more explicitly about national sovereignty than the following statement of the Imam? Democracy is the vote of the majority. Whatever the majority say is valid, even if it is wrong, even if it's to their own disadvantage. You are not their guardian to say that this is to your disadvantage and we won't go along. You are their lawyer. You are not their guardian.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Spring of Truth. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi. One of the views of Imam al-Khomeini, radhiyallahu alayhi, him saying, our nation must appreciate these morning sessions as they keep the nation alive throughout the Ashura lamentation and more. So if these sessions continue in 10 days, other than these blessed days. This is a very straightforward point Imam Khomeini tries to make, but it is very powerful in its nature. The survival of the Islamic Republic, the survival of the Islamic world, and the survival of Islam itself obviously lies in the blood of Imam al-Hussein alayhi as-salam and his sacrifice. Imam al-Hussein's blood and sacrifice is the drive for us to keep Islam alive. So Imam Khomeini is saying holding these majalis for 10 days is good, but it needs to be held throughout the year. Why? Because we need to maintain a system, not to maintain the crying, not to maintain the sadness, even though that's part of the eulogy, part of the sessions. But in fact, these sessions are educational platforms for people through which I get to learn every time. I myself attend a lecture or attend a session, I come out with a piece of information that I never knew. I come out a different person. I come out with a different perspective to life, with a different perspective to reality, with a different perspective to my faith and to my religion. When I go there and come back, I am not the same. I come out with something extra in my head. And the more we do this, the more we will increase. And that's why the enemies of Islam, they tried their best to make sure that these sessions, these majalis, end and stop. So we should not make it specific to 10 days. It should be throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year. Because it is what kept the nation alive, as Imam al-Khomeini said. And it truly is. Without these sessions, everything will die because we will be corrupted and we become materialistic beings. All we care about material matter, just like some of the civilized, so-called civilized nations and some of these tyrannic systems and, as we call it, the West. All they care about is their lust and desires, nothing else. They are dead in the sense that their morality and their faith does not exist anymore. As Muslims, we need to keep our spirituality and morality alive with these sessions and majalis.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every day, never forget to say. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We will be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Economic divide.
The US dollar is under threat, and the way it's reacting to it, well, it's not reacting as fast as it should. I may not be able to prevent it. The threat, digital currencies, and no, it's not just Bitcoin or the likes. Hi, I'm Kavit Atley. In this edition of Economic Divide, we will look at why the dollar is under threat and explore what other countries are doing about digital currencies. Coming up in this program, CBDC, issued by central banks, central bank digital currencies. 90 countries are looking at it. That may pose a threat to the U.S. dollar and its dominance. One of the things we'll be looking at in this program. Also, the U.S. is losing the global race to decide the future of money, and it could doom the dollar, having trouble even concluding its multi-year exploration into the possibility of an e-dollar. So is the dollar doomed to fail by taking its time? We'll have to find out. And finally, U.S. sanctions. A foreign policy tool for the U.S. may lose its efficiency, CBDC challenging these sanctions, and of course, as a result, the U.S. sanctions may be under threat.
Digital currencies. They're called central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs. CBDCs will become more commonplace sooner than one can imagine.
It is a revolution because of the tremendous opportunity this shift in payment systems to central bank digital currency, stable coins, provides to us as consumers in terms of speed, cost, accessibility.
Seven countries are investigating its usage. They account for over 90% of the world's gross domestic product. Potentially, countries representing one-fifth of the world's population may issue a digital currency in the next few years. Just a hype? Not so, since it has happened already. As of today, 9 countries have now fully launched a digital currency, including China, Sweden, the Bahamas, the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union, and the Marshall Islands.
The digital yuan is definitely a key element to the digital economy. And, you know, it's a fiat, digital fiat in the essence, but deployed on a blockchain.
Okay, social media posts, that's what we're going to be looking at in this section, and the post on this topic was just really overwhelming. Naturally, of course, that's because the crypto craze is still in full effect, whether it's Bitcoin or other digital currencies, and it doesn't look like it's going to go away anytime soon. Our first entry actually covers India. XDC News announced that India may launch a CBDC pilot next year. It said that India is poised to become the fifth largest economy in the world, and then it's only natural, because if China has launched its own CBDC, why shouldn't India? However, you have another entry that said, he has said that while many governments are seemingly interested in issuing or are experimenting with CBDCs, the reality is that it will take several years before such digital currencies are fully rolled out. So you can see that there's pushback there. It continues to say, if governments do pull it off, however, it would be very beneficial for crypto, as it would just increase the ease of switching in and out of decentralized crypto such as Bitcoin. So obviously you can see the pushback that's there, but at the same time giving hope to whether the governments around the world can actually pull something like this off. Now, in this program we have suggested how the US dollar will be threatened by the CBDCs, but don't take our word for it. There is another name that you may be familiar with who has stated the same, and that's JP Morgan has threatened the hegemony of the US dollar by the CBDCs. JP Morgan believes that the central bank digital currencies may undermine the hegemony of the US dollar. There is no country with more to lose from the disruptive potential of digital currency than the US. JP Morgan further added, this revolves primarily around the US dollar hegemony, issuing the global reserve currency and the medium exchange for international trade in commodities, goods and service conveys immense advantages. Okay. Did you understand what that meant? I mean, what does that exactly mean? We're joining us to explain that and more is Mark Thornton. He's a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute. All right, Mark, digital currencies, the next wave, as they call it, in evolution of the nature of money for the digital economy, which is something that we're headed down, if not many parts of the world already there. The U.S. has been late in this development, as many have indicated, of what's called the CBDC. Do you think that the U.S. is actually losing the race to adopt one, which is the future of money, as some have said? And also, will it actually doom the almighty dollar, as they call it?
Well, a digital currency issued by the government is rather almost superfluous nowadays, in the sense that we can all engage in electronic transactions via credit cards, debit cards, online transactions. All of these are already happening electronically, and so the absolute value of a Federal Reserve electronic currency, I don't see as being a very powerful and positive right now. Eventually, that's the way the world is going to look, but in terms, so it definitely is the future, but the U.S. Delay in terms of the regulation, that is basically, you know, everybody knows that eventually the economy is going towards digital currencies. And cryptocurrencies, of course, which are much more secure, and also things that add value over time as well.
All right. Well, let's see what Bill Still, author of The Money Masters, thinks about this. Bill Stills, welcome. Banks are centralized middlemen. We know that when it comes to financial transactions. Now you have digital currencies that perhaps are going to eliminate that. And one particular quote, the more popular cryptocurrency or digital currency becomes, the fewer profits the banking system can actually reap. Does this actually threaten then the U.S. financial system, i.e. the banks? And how will digital currency affect the U.S. economy?
Well, it must be substantial, because there's substantial pressure for them to make the change, and they still resist. So it is that they don't see how they can make nearly as much money as they are right now by allowing moving to a Bitcoin-based economy or their own digital dollar-based economy. No matter how you slice it, their profits, the privately owned central bank's profits, are going to decrease, and not only their profits, but their power. Right now, you know, all additional money that goes into the flows into the system has to flow through them and their debt-based system, which is much more empowering to the centralized government than the digital economy. And so the digital economy, by its very nature, provides the citizens, the average person, much more freedom. And that's something that the privately owned central bank system just doesn't like, because that's more freedom for us and less power for them.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program. We are fast approaching the end of the year, but the news revolving around the economy remains hot topics. A new survey came out this past week. It revealed that 83% of millennial millionaires now own crypto. And that's important because, first of all, the generational gap in investment, as they described it, it could create issues for wealth managers. Why is that important? Because that is one way that crypto could negatively affect Wall Street. So it's something for wealth managers in particular to think about. Moving on to our next crypto-related item, dollar to hit zero. That's what it said. This particular headline said, crypto guru has predicted that Americans should stock up on milk and gas because the dollar is about to hit zero. He cited the soaring inflation as one reason, also interest rates going negative as another, and he said that the U.S. dollar will crash in his eyes, or in his thinking, or in his analysis by the year 2022, and that Americans should stock up on essentials, as we just mentioned, and actually they should go ahead and prepay their bills. Next up, inflation. Gosh, we talk about this in this program so much. And the next two pieces are on that. EU inflation, in this particular piece of news, soaring to 30-year high for 19 EU states. And that's as of the recording of this program. Annual consumer inflation for these 19 EU states surged last month to this record, which is 4.9% from 4.1% a month earlier. And the last time that happened was in the year 1991. And case in point for Europe as a whole, UK, which is not part of the EU, but it recorded its highest inflation in a decade, came in at 5.1%. The rise in consumer prices from fuel to food is bad news for Brits, as they are already suffering from post-Brexit fluctuations. Plus, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, he's facing a test for himself and his party after suffering defeat in the by-elections. Now, those were the news that we picked out again.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
This is our in-depth section. We are going to take a look at what China has given to the U.S. and which many are calling it a gift. Well, you can say it's an unintentional gift. And what is that gift? Crypto mining. Let's look back at the year, well, this year, but at the month, June of 2021. This is when China told its bank to stop facilitating transactions and issued basically a ban on mining, essentially putting a ban on crypto mining as it had launched one of its own digital currencies called the digital yuan. At its peak, 71.70% of all crypto mining in the world took place. So you can see how much of a market share China actually had to that. So when China enacted that crypto ban, obviously it went down in terms of the percentage, which came all the way down to 38%. The crackdown led to this 38% fall in mining globally. So I hope you have us with this particular explanation that we're giving. So you had 71% of the crypto mining in the entire world taking place in China, and then it came down 38% globally because of it. Now, here's where this ban was a gift to the U.S. Let's take a look at how the U.S. crypto mining then picked up as a result of this ban. The activity more than doubled in the 4 months to the end of August. And what happened as a result? It increased U.S. market share to 38%. So you can see where the U.S. was ranking at 3.5% only, and now 38% of all crypto mining is taking place in the United States. Not bad. That's why we're calling it a gift. Well, Sam Tabar is the Chief Strategy Officer at Miner Bit Digital. He has said that China's Bitcoining mining ban was basically an unintentional gift to the U.S., as we just indicated. He also went on to say, thanks to their ban, an entire sector migrated to North America, along with innovation, labor, and machines. So you have people in mining companies in particular that are very happy about that. Now, we want to take a look at this final piece, which is emphasizing what we just said. This is Chad Everett Harris, CEO of Miner Whinstone, which operates the Rockdale site owned by the U.S. company Riot Blockchain. This is what he has said.
Expand and grow their businesses to help take over more of the network support for Bitcoin mining.
All right, that's the CEO. This is what a resident of that state actually thinks about crypto mining. Can you believe that? I mean, a state, I'm not the only one in the U.S. that is allowing crypto mining on a large scale, and that's right under the nose of the U.S. government, because in essence, what it's doing is taking away the power of the U.S. dollar, and the government is just sitting idly by. At least that's what it appears. Well, joining us for a rundown of this is Mark Thornton. He's a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute. Okay, welcome, Mark. So we're looking at cryptocurrencies. We're looking at digital currencies. The U.S. government has been increasingly taking steps one way or another to try to undermine cryptocurrency transactions and importing the widespread financial surveillance of the banking system to cryptocurrencies. What threat do you think does cryptocurrencies pose for the U.S.?
Well, they're not infringing on cryptocurrency and cryptocurrency users just because they want to suppress their privacy. They're after their money. And so they're using regulation and brute force in order to collect more tax revenue and to discourage the use of cryptocurrency. They would prefer everybody in the United States and around the world be forced to use the U.S. dollar. And so they're worried about people fleeing to cryptocurrencies as a hedge against the U.S. dollar and against inflation. You know, whereas the U.S. dollar is falling in value, cryptocurrency is on a long run trend. Right now, it's down significantly in the short run, but the long run trend is up. So it's not really for your paycheck and what you buy on a weekly basis at the store, but for people with a lot of money, business people, entrepreneurs, bankers, and so forth, those people are really concerned about their currency and their cash in the long run. So the U.S. is trying to take a cut in terms of taxation, and they're trying to suppress cryptocurrencies in order to help prop up the U.S. dollar.
Okay, that's what our guest, Mark Thornton, thinks. Let's bring in author of The Money Masters, Bill Still, to get his thoughts on that. Bill Still, welcome to Economic Divide. Our guest, Mark Thornton, thinks that in the long run, cryptocurrencies are going to be domineering, to say the least. But we're looking at the U.S. government taking increasingly steps to try to undermine the anonymity of cryptocurrency transactions. Do you think that the cryptocurrency actually poses a threat to the U.S.? Is that the way that the U.S. thinks about it?
Well, it puts at risk the debt money system that the international bankers have imposed on the United States since 1913. In other words, right now, Joe Biden is spending a lot of money, like $2 or $3 trillion, into the U.S. economy. But he's not just spending money. He's borrowing money to spend money. And the borrowing part adds extra interest. And this extra interest could amount to nearly $1 trillion per year of additional interest. And so, but that's just not, absolutely not necessary. They could do it without adding the interest. But of course, this is a debt money system that has made them very wealthy and powerful. And so they're not about to do that. And cryptocurrency, which operates with a very small cost, would threaten that system directly.
So I know that the combination has caused some confusion out there. So to make it clear, it's not the same as cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is decentralized and permissionless, meaning nobody controls it and everybody have access to it. While the central bank digital currency, like the digital yuan in this regard, is centralized and controlled by the PBOC.
Nigeria is the latest country to launch a CBDC.
This payment system now provides high value and time critical payment services to financial institutions and ultimately serves as the backbone for every electronic payment in Nigeria.
Of the countries with the four largest central banks, namely the US, the Euro area, Japan, and the UK, the United States is the furthest behind.
And that fear of the unknown, in the move to regulate before understanding, will only stifle American ingenuity and put us at a competitive disadvantage.
And that could threaten the status of the dollar.
If the federal government instead stifles the adoption of digital assets, issuers, talent, and capital will flee for more welcoming jurisdictions. That would be a disaster for Americans, both consumers and workers, and our economy as a whole.
The U.S. is trying hard to cope with the rise of cryptocurrencies and digital currencies, or CBDC, and it is afraid that it would lose leverage in one key area, foreign policy and the use of sanctions. The U.S. has actually made it public through its Treasury Department, warning that digital currencies could weaken U.S. sanctions. The report said technological innovations such as digital currencies, alternative payment platforms, and new ways of hiding cross-border transactions all potentially reduce the efficacy of American sanctions. These technologies offer malign actors opportunities to hold and transfer funds outside the traditional dollar-based financial system. but the U.S. has been worried about the decline of the dollar since it has overused its sanctions regime against countries it sees as adversaries like China, Russia, Venezuela, and Iran. These countries have all taken steps to not only reduce their reliance on the U.S. dollar, but also eliminate it in some cases when it comes to bilateral trade. They have accused the U.S. of using sanctions as a political tool. The new digital payment system could erode the power of American sanctions as this trend continues. Another financial instrument that could prove futile would be SWIFT, the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. It serves as an intermediary and executor of financial transactions between banks worldwide. Because of cryptocurrencies and CBDCs, countries will have a much easier time transacting with each other directly. This would remove the need for the US dollar or SWIFT. It will also remove the oversight by this organization or the requirement for its member countries to hand over their financial transactions. Already, China and Russia are moving to eliminate the U.S. dominance of global financial system. The leaders of the two countries have agreed on plans to establish a new shared international financial framework. Okay, that does it for this section of the program. Please let us know what you think about digital currencies. Are you for them or against them? It's important that we hear from you. And from me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next time.
It is pretty clear that the world of money is moving towards digital currencies. Governments around the world will need to jump on board, or literally, they could sink. Well, the U.S. has been late in going digital. That it's going to adopt a digital currency, the notion is still on the table. I mean, after all, this could potentially mean losing control and losing profits. What does that mean? It means that banks are going to be affected. It would eat away from the bottom line. But is it too late for the U.S.? Will the onslaught of countries introducing digital currencies downgrade or decrease the value of the dollar, where it can no longer be used as, let's say, a foreign policy tool, i.e. sanctions? That could happen sooner than later. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. Until the next episode, it's goodbye from me, Kavit Atley, and the entire team.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.